Hey, what's up? This is Chad from Hell Yeah, and you're listening to the Classic Rock and Metal Podcast. Come on.
Okay, now don't panic. It's not the first Monday of the month, so this can't be the Classic Rock and Metal Podcast, right? Well, half right. This is the brand new Classic Rock and Metal Next Generation show. Basically, we've found that there's so many great new bands that play just like the old bands that we like, we couldn't fit them all into the main show, so we've given them their own. We'll squeeze these shows in between the main Classic Rock and Metal podcast show, which, as always, will be on the first Monday of the month, and feature the greats from the 70s and 80s, many of whom are still doing what they do best. But stick around now and you'll hear that these new bands are actually more interested in having fun than telling you how miserable they are, like Chad from the awesome supergroup Hell Yeah, which includes former Pantera superstar drummer Vinnie Paul.
Don't feel like you can't enjoy your life. I mean, what's the fucking point of living? Might as well put a gun in your mouth and just get it over with.
White Wizards, driving force and founder member John Leon has had his fair share of flack from all corners, not least music critics and former bandmates. Is he bothered?
To this day, I don't care. You know, I don't care what critics think of us. I don't care if death metal guys call us, you know, weak or pussies. I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm doing the music I love and I'm really proud of it.
And the cheeky chaps from Jet Black found out that they're not quite big enough to mess with the hot dog vendors at a major festival just yet.
I think the conversation went, did you nick the sausage? No, I didn't make the sausage. Did you nick the hot sausage? I didn't nick the sausage. Right, if you don't tell us this time, we're kicking you all out and you're not playing. Did you nick the sausage? Yeah, I nicked the sausage.
We'll also be hearing from Primitai and The Jokers, as well as music from absolutely all of the above, plus this one from an old friend, sorely missed.
Before you see it, the more I'm feeling up, you're right.
was, of course, Stand Up and Shout by the late, great Ronnie James Dio, taken from the new release from Niji Entertainment, Dio Live at Donington 83 and 87, which contains both of the shows Dio played at the festival in those 2 years. It's a great package, really great photos. It's a must-have for any Dio fan. You can get that for around £9. I think there's links for where to get it from in our show notes. Incidentally, I love that air horn just towards the end of the song, which was kind of a trademark of Donington in the 80s, if you were lucky enough to be there. If that was you and that was your air horn, please get in touch. I would love to hear from you. Now, a relatively new band made up from some survivors, literally, of the 90s rock and metal scene. Hell Yeah is made up of two members of Mudvayne, guitarist Greg Tribbett and vocalist Chad Gray, Nothing Faces Tom Maxwell, Damage Plan's Bobzilla, and none other than Pantera drummer Vinnie Paul. Although they shy away from the term, it's hard not to call them a supergroup, but what's more super is the fact that the band jolted Vinnie Paul out of musical semi-retirement following the murder on stage of his brother and fellow Pantera member, guitarist Dimebag Darrell Abbott, in 2004. After a well-received debut album in 2007, recorded at the studio housed in Dimebag Darrell's residence, they decamped to Vinnie Paul's house to write and record the second album, Stampede, which was released earlier in 2010. It's a very diverse record, and I was lucky enough to talk to vocalist Chad Gray, and I started by asking him if it was everything they'd wanted it to be.
Absolutely. It really is. I think we had a better understanding of what we're doing with Hell Yeah now. We started, I didn't really know Vince, and, you know, so we didn't have, like, a personal relationship. We just kind of jumped in together somehow and wrote a record. So it was kind of an experiment. But then over the course of writing the record, mixing the record, mastering the record, going out on tour, getting to know each other better, when we came back around to it for part two, you know, Stampede, what ended up being Stampede, we were brothers, you know what I mean? We're like not strangers anymore. And I always figured in Mudvayne, the stuff that I did was like the most diverse stuff I'd ever done, but this is a very diverse record.
Was that intentional or did it just...
You know what, man? We like a lot of stuff. We're influenced by a lot of stuff. And we carry our influences for, you know, 30 years, you know what I mean? So it's just like, you know, I think the thing about Hell Yeah is we're so honest. We don't question what we do. You know, if we start writing something and it's like, you know, if we were very closed-minded and we're only going to be heavy, you know, Alcohol and Ass would have never made it on the first record. We've been like, oh, man, we can't do that. That's a country song. I think that song alone is a testament to the honesty of Hell Yeah. You know what I mean? That we're willing to put songs like that on a record or really dig deep and be personal and, you know, be honest with our fans and therapeutic almost sometimes. So
it's funny because there's some great new records coming out from some of the old bands, and a lot of them are saying they're getting that, jumping in the studio, they're not trying to follow a trend, they're just laying down whatever comes into their heads.
You're an artist. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you're an artist, and if you overthink, like if I was sitting looking at a canvas and I had a palette and I had a brush and I just stood there and second-guessed actually taking my brush, put it in the paint, and touching the brush to the canvas, and I just sat and just kept working myself over, whatever, I'd never get anything done. I'd be sitting there for weeks with an empty canvas, you know what I mean? Like, so we just kind of jump in. The best way to get on your feet is to get off your ass, you know what I mean? It's like, that's kind of the vibe that we have. We go in and it starts like, you got a riff? Yeah, I got this. Okay, what do you think about this? Okay, bam, 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 bam. Next thing you know, we're through.
Knowing each other much better now for the second album, do you think setting up camp in Vinny's house helped?
Absolutely. It was safer too. But driving over to Dime's house was like 20 minutes away. Dude, I mean, we track vocals. We record basically until you can hear me slurring in the microphone, and then we stop. And then, you know, we're all piling in the car and driving back to Vinny's house. It's like 5:30 in the morning, you know, and we're, you know, hammered. It's a really stupid thing to do, you know what I mean? So, I mean, usually Sterling was cool. Like, he, you know, but, you know, Greg and I would be pretty hammered because we'd get there at, you know, on the first record, we get there, you know, 5 or 6 in the afternoon or in the evening or whatever, and we'd walk out of there at 5 or 6 in the morning. So, I mean, it was like, you know, but doing it at Vince's house, I was a little uneasy with it at first. I believe in the separation of home and work, and with us working there and living there, I was wondering, like, am I going to be able to stay to keep my focus, you know what I mean, or am I just going to end up laying around and doing nothing and getting comfortable, and complacence sucks. You don't want it when you're trying to work, you know? So I was worried about being too comfortable, and then just out of the blue, just kind of like, just, you know, it took a few days and then just kind of fell right into it, and here we are.
Yeah, it worked out. I read somewhere that you were nervous after the first album about whether, not whether there'd be a fan base, but whether people were into what you were doing. Or I don't know, I read there was some kind of nervousness about going out after the first album, but now that everybody was into it and you've kind of delivered everybody a really great second album, that must feel pretty good being.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, I mean, you know, with anything, you know, I've lived the sophomore effort before, you know what I mean? And thank God I got through it with Mudvayne, you know. We actually built on our second record, so that was a good thing. There's always going to be nerves, you know what I mean? What are people going to think? But you know what? You can only do that for so long.
The complaint you often hear is that so many of the very new bands are just but miserable all the time, but you guys seem to be having a ball.
We're having a blast. You know what I mean? I think we've all been through that stage. You know what I mean? We've all, you know, gone through the woe is me kind of crap. You know what I mean? Like with every song. I think what we're trying to do, we're on a mission, I think, is just to let people, remind people to, you know, be self-indulgent. You know what I mean? Don't get so wrapped up in your life to where, you know, with the wife and the kids and the job and everything or whatever, that you can't have a good time. That's what we want. We're promoting that. Don't feel like you can't enjoy your life. I mean, what's the fucking point of living? You might as well put a gun in your mouth and just get it over with. If you just, all of a sudden, you're living to work. You don't have fun anymore. You're miserable in your family life. You're miserable in your home life. You're miserable in your work life. You're miserable in everything. You know what I mean? I can't live that way. You know, people could be listening to me right now and be like, oh yeah, easy for him to say, you know, being the big rock star or whatever. Dude, there's two kinds of people in this world. There are rock stars that have Ferraris parked in the garage of their mansions, and there are dudes like me. You know what I mean? I'm a touring musician. I'm not a rock star. You know what I'm saying? So the checkbooks look a lot different. But I think it's really, really important that people focus on living life and having fun. And I think that that's what Hell Yeah is all about. Back to it.
It's a welcome return. I think a lot of people look at some of the 80s bands and like, you can't watch a Van Halen video and not smile. You know,
Totally.
Bring the good times back.
Absolutely, dude. It's weird because like when I was very young, my mom was young, so she was kind of wasn't really done being a kid, you know. So I would, you know, play with my Hot Wheel cars and you know, my toy cars in the back seat of the car while they cruised the strip, you know, like back in the day. And this is when stuff like Seeger and Sabbath and Frampton and Eagles and things were on the radio. I mean, this is, you know, that whole kind of Dazed and Confused era, you know what I mean? And it was good times, man. So that's where, that's where I came into music, and I was always really into music, and I was fortunate to have a cool mom that like got me into good music very young. I was more like into like, you know, Crew, like Too Fast for Love, and like when they were Leather and Studs era, not Pink Spandex. I was out, I was over it by then. Then I was on to the next heavy thing, and then the next heavy, like Metallica to Megadeth to Slayer to Obituary. I'm a fan of music, period. You know what I mean? Like, here I am, this dude, and then I hear Smells Like Teen Spirit. The first time I'm like, that's an amazing song. This band's going to be huge, you know? So then I got into Nirvana. It's just like, almost like, what are you doing, Chad? That's not allowed. And it was funny, because when all that's going on, you got Pantera. You know what I mean? Like, and I was listening to them in like 91. You know, and it blew me away, man. I went and saw them in, I think it would have been 92 or something like that, or 93, at a club in St. Louis. Like, we went down there and saw them, and they destroyed that place. And the first time I'd ever seen them, me and my friends were into them, but like, it was like one of those things of like, they're our band kind of thing, you know? It's like, you want to like covet it and just like protect it and not let anybody else know about it, because you don't want them to blow up, you know what I mean? And it's like, we saw them guys, man, and it was just like, it changed my life. Like, these guys are insane, you know? And then I probably saw them 10 times, you know, over the course of the years and stuff. But yeah, you know, I was a big, big Pantera fan, man. And, but I don't know anybody that wasn't.
No, that's true.
I mean, honestly.
It's funny then, because I was going to say, is that Hell Yeah, because you would be such a big Pantera fan and Vince is now in the band, there seemed to be something kind of inevitable about Hell Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seemed almost sort of not unstoppable, but it just all seemed to kind of come into place. Mm-hmm. And everybody seems so happy with it. Is it going to outlast everything else?
I hope so. I mean, I really do. I mean, I'm so proud, man. You know, every day I like look to my left and I see this guy that I've been playing music with for 14 years and Greg. You know what I mean? And I look to my right and I see this guy and Tom that I was talking to in 2000. This band was an idea in 2000. Just a couple of drunk guys getting together going, man, we should start a band. You know what I mean? It took us 7 years to do it, but he's in the band. And that, and those conversations are what started this whole fire. You know what I mean? And then I look behind me and I've got this guy in Vince Paul that I'm like, I've been a fan since 91. You know what I mean? And, you know, of his other work. And he's playing drums in my band. And I mean, it's like, it really doesn't get any more proud than that. And I don't give it, I don't care about money and I don't care about this and that and comfort or whatever, man. We have so much fun when we play. It's just ridiculous. We have so much fun. We drink, we laugh. Like, we laugh more probably than any band that I know. And we're not afraid to say it. You know what I mean? It's all good.
Wizard were formed in Los Angeles in 2007 by John Leon because he was fed up of bands dominating the heavy metal scene being so miserable. He also wanted to play a style of metal not often heard since the golden period of the 1980s. He realised that being fashionable wasn't everything, so he took his own direction and continues to do so. He's churned some band members in the past 3 years, but recently toured the UK with a new lineup in support of their first full-length album, Over the Top, which was released this year. I caught up with him before the last night of the tour in London to sweep away the nonsense and get the real story.
Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where I think, you know, I was having a lot of arguments with musicians, even in my scene, you know, just about, you know, everyone, so many musicians always kind of form bands based on what they think the industry is going to sign, and they tend to compromise themselves to that area. And I just got to the point, I said, you know what, the next great bands are going to completely say F that, and they're going to completely just, you know, completely not worry about what anybody thinks and not worry about what the industry thinks. And to this day, I don't care. You know, I don't care what critics think of us. I don't care if death metal guys call us, you know, weak or pussies. I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm doing the music I love, and I'm really proud of it. And you know, we've continued to move forward with the vision of what it needs to be, and it's been a fun experience, and hopefully now we'll continue to grow. We want to have fun. I mean, we're obviously serious about the music, but we definitely also want to have fun with it. I think it's, you know, it's that heavy metal parking lot mentality of just, you know, I'm got kind of tired of bands working out their issues on stage and through their music to me. I'm tired of hearing how pissed off people are. You know, I'm done. It's like, all right, life sucks. Great. Well, why don't we just have a good time then, and let's kind of put that behind us, so to speak. It seems to me that heavy metal's really polarized itself in that sense too, because there's a lot of heavy metal musicians that have this kind of mentality that if they're not heavy enough or they're not perceived as being hard enough, that they're going to be called pussies. And I think that you have to get past that. You have to say, you know what, we have to get back to writing good songs in heavy metal, because to me the best musical pinnacle is when you have a great song mixed with the power of what heavy metal music can bring, which, you know, all the bands that I'm influenced by, Iron Maiden, Rush, Judas Priest, Scorpions, Dio, all those bands, to me that's the pinnacle of music, because it's that complete power mixed with amazing songwriting. And I think there hasn't been really many amazing songwriters in metal. There's been a lot of great riff guys, and there's been a lot of good shredders, and there's been a lot of good, like, you know, like different things, but there hasn't been really any great songwriting going on in metal for a long time, in my opinion. You see actresses like Drew Barrymore wearing Iron Maiden shirts. I'm like, come on, how long has she been listening to Maiden? No, it's just a cool thing to put on an Iron Maiden shirt and go out and walk around. It makes her look like she's cool. She's not a staunch. You know? It makes a statement. It's a fashion statement. Yeah. So the merchandising, Kiss, Motorhead, all these bands that have great merch, their merch ends up, that's another aspect of it too that I think that is important. And it's something that, you know, as a band, you know, we're still a baby band, an underground band, but whether we're going to blow up or not is going to be probably dependent on more factors like that, unfortunately. Or we're just going to have to keep touring like Rush did for 6-7 years on the music and make 6 or 7 records and remain, you know, not making a lot of money and keep trying to double and triple that fan base each 6 months, you know, right, as we go and see how we can do with that. And that's over the test of time, that's going to be based on, you know, how long do you have to stand to hang in there, you know, and do that and be willing to sacrifice so much to do it. Because there's a lot of sacrifice in going on tour and doing this when you're not making a lot of money. People are so nostalgic for that time period of music, and they're nostalgic for great songs that were part of their lives for 20 years. So when there's so many experiences, you have to also, as a band, build up, you know, you have a great catalog and you continue to write great songs. Eventually it's going to come back around for you, because people start to have experiences to those songs and they have like an affinity for the tunes, and that's when you start playing shows and people start singing your songs back to you, and it's like, okay, wow, you know, this is cool. That's, to me, that's what starts that cycle. But people have to, you know, yeah, I mean, that's why all these bands, Maiden, Rush, you name it, they're all bigger than they've ever been, because the nostalgia is ruling now. Mm. I think a lot of people that were into all those bands 20 years ago, there seems to be a certain sense of adoration and passion that really makes people want to, it makes them feel like they're 20 again, getting laid for the first time, or they're partying. It just brings them back to that place. And life runs by so quick that I think sometimes we're nostalgic for the things that we, you know, that everyone misses. So there was that kind of 30-year period or so between like 65 to 95 that was just like a really amazing time to be a part of music culture and rock and roll. You know, towards the mid to late 90s, everything started kind of, you know, started dissipating, and it just seemed to me, music just seemed to lose its way there for a while. Now there's kind of bands that are kind of now feeding off of those older influences and trying to bring something back.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, I think we did get to the point where everything had been done, you know, to a certain extent. I mean, you can go avant-garde and crazy and try to do some really experimental crazy shit in the underground, but for the most part, I think with a 6-string guitar and a 4-string bass and drums and vocals and all the studio gimmicks, all our gadgets that have come along over the years, I think we pretty much, you know, over a 30-year period, we did it all.
You've been through some personnel in the last couple of years. Have you finally got the lineup that you want?
Once we finally have the guys. I mean, if you look at Iron Maiden, they're a great example. They, you know, Steve Harris was not signed those first 4 years, but if you watch the early years, he went through like 15 dudes at least, if not 20. So I mean, you know, he just was lucky enough to not be in the public eye yet, or signed to where press people were gabbing about it and fans were gabbing, and there was no internet Making a band is one of the hardest things there is. It's like, you know, being in a relationship with one person is tough enough. When you're in a band, I mean, you literally are in a relationship with, you know, 3, 4, 5 people, depending on what your lineup is. And it's the more people, the harder it is. That's why it's so hard for bands to make it more than anything else. Is, of course, you have to have good songwriting, you have to have the product, but once you do, it's all about the personalities working or not working, and everybody having that synergy, you know. And that's why bands like Aerosmith, Rush, those bands have been able to stay together 30 years with the same lineup, you know. I mean, it's unbelievable, but you watch them in interviews, you get a feel for their personalities. They all click together. It all really works, you know. You watch the Rush documentary, you just see why these guys have been able to do this so long together, because it just works. Aerosmith, you know, they have their issues, but you can see that, you know, they've kept it together a long time. For 5 dudes, that's unbelievable. 3 guys is one thing, but to me, Aerosmith's another band. It's like really impressive they've managed to keep all those guys together in that band so long.
Shooting Star, which is the new single, is the one with the new lineup.
Yeah, that was recorded with Peter. I actually wrote the music for Shooting Star before the Over the Top record was released, and I was going to include that song, but I hadn't written lyrics yet. I just had the musical piece. I had a lot of vocal melodies in my head, but then I just kind of held off because I was happy with the songs I had for Over the Top. I felt like that was the record. I didn't want to do any more with it, and I stuck with the songs for Over the Top, and that's what we recorded. But after that, you know, the piece of music had always still kind of been on the shelf, and when Ronnie James Dio died, I just started writing some lyrics on the plane when I was on a plane trip, and I just, you know, just whatever, just was thinking about Ronnie Dio and kind of reflecting on, you know, my past with that music, and what an amazing singer he was, and what a positive element he brought into heavy metal. That's the thing that's missing in heavy metal, is the positivity, you know, like that colorful kind of dynamic, you know. Everything's freaking gray. So when Ronnie died, it felt like a little bit of that color was kind of gone, you know. So I kind of wrote the lyrics, and they just started to vibe with that piece of music. Just came into that, just they worked together. I was like, nah. And as I wrote the lyrics, that piece of music was playing in my head, and I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do this to.
See?
that was the single Shooting Star, which is, as you heard, about Ronnie James Dio, and also includes a cover of We Rock, another Dio song, on the B-side. It's available now from the appropriately named Earache label, who we thank for setting up that chat with John, from iTunes and other places, so check out the show notes and we'll point you in the right direction. Jet Black have been doing the rounds this year in support of their excellent debut album, Get Your Hands Dirty. They did Ozfest and Download, toured with Airborne, Reckless Love and Enough's Enough, with next year promising a new album and more of the same. They make no apologies for having a distinctly 80s twang to their style simply because it's the music they love and listen to the most. Some things do change though, as in the old days, if you were interviewing a drummer and a bass player, you'd know you were going to be made to work for it. But in this case, Matt Oliver and Tom Wright were the perfect gentlemen.
Jet Black's been around for three or four years, but we started playing music, us four together, when we were about 15 years old at school, and we were just fucking around with covers, anything we could play, mainly with three chords in, that wasn't too hard. Literally, Matt bought a drum kit and started. I think we started the band before Matt had a drum kit, to be honest.
Yeah, we did. I was supposed to be the singer, but then I realised my voice was absolute shit, so I thought, right, well, I'll just do the drums in and we'll stick to that, and we managed to.
So then he had to find a drum kit. And then we got these songs together, plus a few more, and then thought, right, this is it, this is the sound we need, and we were best at. Because, you know, it's the music we grew up on, and the music we were doing before that was always dipping the toe in it, but we weren't quite good enough to pull it off. And then we got to a point where we could finally pull it off. Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
I think we have.
So, how was Ozfest?
Amazing. It was good. Really good.
We were so surprised because we were first on the Jägermeister stage, and you know the album's only been out like what, 4 months or something. So we thought, well, Skindred were playing at the same time. We thought, well, 50 people there would be pretty good. We were expecting, you know, 50 people. Started playing as soon as the first note, it was like 400, 500 people probably. And we were just blown away. We couldn't believe it. We were so happy, and they were loving it as well. And there's a lot of people who knew the songs. So it couldn't be better, really.
Yeah, it's taken quite a long time to get the album out, so when you can actually see people actually singing the songs in the crowd, it's, you know, it's quite different to us. Yeah. The mums haven't bought it. The only problem with Ozfest for us was that we couldn't stick around to it.
You had 2 gigs,
yeah, because we had to get on the tube and train with a lot of our equipment, and then we got to Manchester, got the train to Manchester, got a taxi from the station, turned up at the venue, loaded the gear in, and we were on stage in about 15 minutes later. So it was pretty chaotic, but they appreciated it, I think, and we did as well.
But it was funny, because we had the 2 shows on and we're sharing gear with Reckless Love, they needed stuff in Manchester earlier. So we had to send our van and our crew to Manchester. We had to borrow certain things for the Ozfest show, but obviously we needed our guitars, so then that we had to go up on the... To get there in time, we'd have to. The only way was the train, unless we got a helicopter, but that wasn't happening. we really were carrying too much. Like, we had a guitar amp head.
And I was in full leathers as well at the same time. It was roasting on the tube, dripping, weren't they?
We could not have carried one more thing. No. One more thing. Not one more drumstick, I don't think. No. But it was well worth it. It was amazing. Yeah. We're on the way up to Manchester, we were really buzzing as well, because, you know, we were so happy with the gig.
And when we realised we'd left all the merchandise in London.
Hell yeah, we did that, yeah.
That was the only thing we left behind.
There's a new crop, but there is a crop of, I guess you'd say, retro bands. I mean, Airborne, Black Spiders, you guys, Reckless Love. I think one of the guys from the Black Spiders, it was his opinion, but he thought it was kind of a new wave.
Yeah,
rock and metal. Do you think that's right? Are you happy with that? Do you think that's right?
Definitely. We were saying, like, we've been talking about it quite a bit. I just think the kids now are getting fed up of the same old music and the emo, and it's depressing, it's miserable. And they want to come back to gigs and have a, you know, a good time and smile a bit more.
I think that's what these fans so about. Well,
wouldn't say the image because the hair and stuff.
They just need some.
They need
fun.
Something else, don't they? They definitely need something else. And there's, like you say, there's a new wave of bands coming out now, and younger bands as well. Like in Nottingham, we played with a band. They were like 16, 17, you know, and their influences are quite similar to ours. So there's definitely.
I think those bands have been out there for a long time, but now they're actually getting exposure because, like we were saying, people are getting bored of the. That sort of emo pop thing's been going for 10 years now, and it needs to die.
You heard it, there you go.
That's the quote of the interview.
Well, I mean, it is different in a way, because you can hear the 70s and 80s stuff, but it is still a new sound. Mm. So I think, I mean, it is a nice mix. It's not like somebody's just said, let's go play...
copied something. Yeah. No, we don't think there's any point in regurgitating something, you know, exactly the same that you've heard. We try and put a different take on it. And I guess there's a few bands that don't do that, but...
Yeah, if you want to hear a Motley Crue album, put a Motley Crue album on. Don't try and start a band and sound like Motley Crue. You've got to do... I think you've got to put your own twist on it. And luckily, people have... With our album, that's what we aim to do. And journalists have picked up on it. You know, people... No one has said they sound exactly like this or that. They can hear the influences in there, but we put our own stamp on it.
And I guess, I suppose, it's because the internet has, fair to say, killed the record sales generally from where they were. But you use it a lot to connect with the fans, and so do a lot of other bands. So I think it's fair to say that a lot of what's happening now, you wouldn't have that.
I don't think... I think it just helps younger bands as well so much. You can just...
The problem is there's a bit more competition now. There's bands everywhere, isn't there? And I think it's just... It means you've got to be better, I think. So in some ways it's good.
But then the good thing about this music as well is people still like buying CDs for it. I don't know why. Even like the young, it's usually the young kids that you download everything, isn't it? Because they're more up to date with everything. Not slagging any of the old listeners off or anything. But you know what I mean? Like, they're the ones that download.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what were we saying?
But like, you know, all these shows, you still got all the kids turn up their CDs to get signed, you know.
The funny thing was when we did the Airborne tour a couple of years ago, like a lot of the guys that we were on our merch desk and that, and a lot of them didn't have an email address. So they couldn't sign up to a mailing list or anything. Oh, don't have an email address. So
they just, it was like a recurring thing. Not a lot of people. So they're obviously the ones that are buying the records, so...
But you've got the rest of this tour. You've got Enough's Enough in December. Mm. Then you've got Hard Rock Hell in December.
We have.
Apparently, they nearly wouldn't let you go because you weren't aware of the sausage bylaws in Wales.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That last time I played Hard Rock Hell, I nicked. Was it one or two?
Oh, here we go. I think it's getting worse.
I walked past the hot dog stand and I stole a sausage out of the boiling hot brine. So I literally got my fingers burnt. I swiftly ate it. I'm pretty sure I nicked the second. And then I got the security caught up with me and they interrogated me quite heavily and I cracked. I think the conversation went, did you nick the sausage? No, I didn't nick the sausage. Did you nick the hot sausage? I didn't nick the sausage. Right, if you don't tell us this time, we're kicking you all out and you're not playing. Did you nick the sausage? Yeah, I nicked the sausage. So I had to dip into my pocket and pay the £2.50 for the sausage. I didn't even get a bun with it, so...
They take that shit very seriously down there, I tell you.
Karma.
If they let one go, that's
exactly.
It.
Exactly, don't fuck around with a hurter, man. Two hot girls coming out in the sunlight. Girls sitting pretty, looking rude, yeah. They see the-
Now, Primitive may come across as five nice lads from Sandhurst, but once the Amps go on, they don't take any prisoners. In 2009, they swept the board by fighting off 12,000 other bands to win the National Surface Unsigned competition, with the final being held at the O2 Arena in London. The current lineup released a new album, The Line of Fire, in October of 2010, and recently completed a nationwide tour with none other than White Wizard. Again, heavily influenced by the heavy metal of the 80s, they're fusing this with more modern styles with a bit of prog thrown in for good measure.
Yeah, my view is that I think pretty much the majority of the band are stuck in the past.
Yeah.
Sort of circa, I don't know, 1986 or something. But then Chris sort of adds a bit of a... bit of a modern sort of take on things. So.
I had the speed and the kick drums.
Yeah.
We never would have had blast beats if it wasn't for me.
Because I get, having listened to the new album, which will be out by the time this comes out, I'm getting bits of prog in there as well, certainly on the vocal side of things. Is that intentional, or were you a big Genesis Marillion fan?
Well, I am a big prog fan, yeah. So I don't know if it's intentional, but that's pretty much, that makes up a lot of what I listen to. So I definitely wanted to, when I joined the band, which was for the second album that's out now, I think my thing was a lot more melody, basically, to the vocals. So you obviously see a big difference in the two albums there. Yeah, definitely a lot of prog influence.
But it works, though. I mean, the second album, there is a big progression. And those influences are still there, but the style is very different, and it does fit very well.
We went for a much bigger, broader sound, whereas for the first album it was very, you know, to the point, heavy metal tracks, da 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 da. This, we've tried to play around with it a bit because we've got a much more versatile singer. Guy tries to serenade.
So talk about the Surface Unsigned then, because that was a pretty big deal for you, wasn't it?
Massive, yeah.
It was how many bands?
12,000 overall, yeah. But 12,000 entered.
And we whittled down to the final, the London final, and then managed to get through to the national final. And then to our surprise almost, really, we ended up winning the thing. So, but yeah, it was absolutely awesome. Like, I'd only just joined the band when we started it, so it was like thrown into the deep end, didn't know what to expect.
Did I see a photo of a human pyramid with you lot, or did I imagine that?
Yeah, you saw that.
Is that a regular?
It was a regular thing about a year ago.
Yeah. We're bringing it back. It was such a crowd sort of favourite whenever, the human pyramid came out.
it's such a trademark Scorpions job, and everybody, they get asked about it once every third interview, I think. Yeah. And they're all going, come on, I'm 61 now, Klaus is like...
It just started off as a messing around in practice, and then we actually did it at the O2, so it's... I almost fell off, but yeah, we pulled it off.
That's what everybody's waiting for, really.
Yeah. It happened in practice, you fell off.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Don't you have to take your shoes off as well?
Yeah. I do that at the side of the stage, like, no one sees.
The Jokers have been around since 2006, and I spent a good deal of the time between then and now telling everyone how good they are. A dangerous game to play, unless, as is the case with this lot, there's something to back up the chatter. Their album, The Big Rock and Roll Show, has caught the attention of many admirers, and rightly so. With a new single, Jamie Jane, on the racks, they took it upon themselves to bring us up to speed on the story so far.
Hi, my name is Joker Jett.
Hello, my name is Paul Hurst.
And we're from The Jokers.
I believe you're here today to talk about your new album,
The Big Rock and Roll Show.
And new single?
Jamie Jane,
Could you emphasise a little bit on the album and single to let everybody know what it's about?
The Big Rock and Roll Show was an album made, and we tried to keep and maintain the classic elements of the bands that we loved when we were kids. Like
bands
Zeppelin.
Like Led Zeppelin, The Who, you know, Hendrix, Small Faces, you know. But we also like bands like Kiss, so we tried to put all these elements in and make it contemporary, and I think we achieved that.
Could you give me a couple of examples of the songs and how you believe these fit into this category?
Ocean of Kings is a very simple track, but has classic elements like the...
Well, it's like what Led Zeppelin would do. It's kind of like the old Middle Earth sound, you know, or Gaelic sound with a, you know, Led Zeppelin were really into it. And we just thought, you know, we want one of them kind of tracks. And we wrote one, Ocean of Kings.
And what about your more party tracks? Because a lot of the album, obviously self-titled The Big Rock and Roll Show, is much more of a upbeat party feel about it.
Yeah, well, the track The Big Rock and Roll Show is quite self-explanatory in the fact that it's about having fun and having a good time.
That's what the album's about. Essentially, it's Super Groover. There's a song, Super Groover, which is just about rock and roll, you know, having a good time, just leaving all your problems behind, and, you know, they're more upbeat, because there's no big message in our record. It's just back to basics, just have a good time, listen to good rock and roll, feel good.
And what about Jamie Jane? Because this is a little bit more different feel to it than the album has.
Yeah, Jamie Jane's a lot more, it's got a bit of glam in there, a bit of AC/DC in there. The album, the Big Rock and Roll Show album, the songs on there were quite integral. Some of them were integral, some of them were rock and roll. But this one's a bit more, I wouldn't say commercial, but it's took from those. We read a review the other day which said that Jamie Jane's one of those songs which was a single kind of song that we'd hear a long time ago, the songs that people would write to be singles, and that's what it's got.
Yeah, it's a good party track about a girl that finds an escape in rock and roll.
So, a good fun song.
Yes.
And where can we download the album, or where can we buy the album and single from?
From Amazon,
iTunes.
HMV, iTunes, yes.
And what about your website and MySpace? Can we get the album from there?
Yeah, the website is www.thejokers.com, and then there's the myspace.com/thejokersmyspace.
And you've got a big tour coming up at the end of the year in December.
Yes. We are on tour from the 3rd of December with Hawkwind right through to the 17th. So check out via our website or MySpace the dates, and please come to see us.
Thank you very much. If you could just introduce your single for us that we're going to play for you now.
Jamie Jane.
And I love you all.
Yeah!
To meet ya, get out of my way and let me in through the door.
And he said,
hey, 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 no freaks are allowed today. Oh no, now the cat's on the floor. She rocks, she rains. I've never seen the fools all killing. No, if that's cool for you, I'd like to come along for the ride. Hey kids, Cooper, Mr. Smith, look who I'm hanging with.
Jamie, Jamie, Jamie.
She's only 16, she's a freak of the scene. She's a star, a rock kid forever.
Hey, 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 hey.
It's all right. You steal the car, you little the psycho, being the bitch you are. You turn the dial, boy, you're rocking around. Oh no, now
That's it for our first Classic Rock and Metal Next Generation show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't know all the bands, I hope you enjoyed the new stuff that you heard, and there'll be more of the same in our December Next Generation show, which features Danko Jones, Volbeat and the Virgin Marys. The next Classic Rock and Metal podcast proper will be on December the 6th, and this month features former Hanoi Rocks frontman Michael Munro, Glenn Hughes, legendary metal producer Chris Zangarides, 80s Originals Tank, and Ronnie Dio's cousin David Rock Feinstein, whose new album features one of Dio's last known studio recordings. Don't miss it.